We are happy to have today Dr. Woodrow Clark to speak about climate change, a call to action. Dr. Clark is a longtime advocate for the environment and renewable energy. He is an internationally recognized author, lecturer, and advisor specializing in sustainable communities. Join me in welcoming Dr. Clark, our guest speaker for today.
Thank you, Dale, very much. I have not actually been in a Unitarian church since I got married to my first wife. I'll just say it's 30 years ago. So I am really honored to be here today and very, very excited and even nervous about it, because when I was growing up, I was president of my youth group in a First Congregationalist Church in Connecticut. And I'll never forget having, as a senior in high school, to give a talk to the congregation, and I was so nervous. I was about, So I think I'm a little bit better these days, but I hope you enjoy the talk. I have to say, though, in all honesty, that this service was wonderful. I really enjoy being here. The song on Earth that was Gary, there was a singing, you shared the hymnal with me. The words, I don't know whether anyone really is watching the words, but were written in 1940 and then revised in 1990. Shows you how far ahead of the curve this congregation, your religious group, is. And I really am honored to be here to share with you some of my thoughts and ideas. I'm just doing this as a plug only because it's worthwhile, but I will be back this afternoon, and there will be some slides and things, so it'll be more entertaining than just looking at me. There'll be some also questions and answers and some other things as well. So I hope some of you can, if not many of you, can make it. What I'm going to do, though, this morning is talk a bit, and we will have some time for Q&A, and where's Doris? Okay, someone's going to have to give me the, cut sign, cut it off, quiet, give some time for some questions. But what I want to do this morning is talk about how important it is for everybody in this congregation, everybody whose children are outside, and I'm almost willing to have the kids come in here and listen to some of this, because we are here due to them. We are paying attention to some of the things that I'm going to be talking about because of them. I will probably get into a lot more detail about this afternoon, but ladies and gentlemen, what I want to communicate to you is that when I think about it, my generation, of which some of you I think are in the same age group, that was a joke. I know they're recording this to kind of play it later to people who can't make it today, so that I'll have to indicate when things are jokes so the people listening will understand I was kidding. But anyway, some of you are my peer group, as I would recognize, and some of us have gotten to the point where we sort of look back at things we did or didn't do in years ago, or what our parents and our grandparents taught us. And I have to say that we need to own up to certain issues, and one of them is we messed up. Now, if I was talking to you over a bar, my second glass from Merlot, I'd use other words to describe how we messed up. But we have goofed up here, folks. And we have to. I'm not talking about therapy. This is not Therapy 101 this morning, all right? This is a sermon, so I'm going to give you some ideas about this. I'm not going to, hope everybody comes out of here as kind of, rejoicing in some way. But what I do want to do is this, is kind of give you some thoughts to take away of things that we can do. And to be blunt about it, the young people in here and our children, the ones who walked out because they're going to miss this part of it, are really the ones who are going to show us what's the right and wrong thing to do. They're the ones that are going to turn off our computers because we don't need them on day and night all time. They're the ones going to turn off the lights. They're the ones going to say, Mom and Dad, how come you're spending so much money on gasoline and filling up? Don't they have cars now? They're either electric or hybrid or something like that. They're the ones that are aware of these things. And I've become more and more aware of it because, in part, I've got two children by my first marriage who were both grown and just had their, they just got married actually 2 years ago, thank God, before the market and everything collapsed. But that was not a joke, by the way. But the other thing, I have actually been remarried and I have a 2.5-year-old son. And that little guy gets it. I'm not kidding. It's unbelievable. I just took him recycling some things yesterday to a place where you put it in and you get a penny or 5 cents or something back. And I wanted to show him this is what you do with plastic. But there are a bunch of things like that. And what I'm going to do now is kind of really talk to all of you about it, give you some ideas of some things I brought with me just to show you that this is not real. it's not one of these things you hear from people. And I do like Washington, D.C. Don't get me wrong, Gary. But I mean, I do like Washington. I really enjoy that. But it won't be 10 years from now. It doesn't even have to be a year from now. These things exist today. Do you want me to repeat that? Because now I'm not kidding. We can do things today as you leave, or you've already been doing them at home. Tell your friends, your colleagues, your family members about them. They're little things, but they're important. Because we, when I say we, all of us are at risk. And what's troubling to me is that we are, if you will, giving this to the next generation. Think about it. What are we doing? Again, this is not Therapy 101. Frankly, ladies and gentlemen, this is science, this is engineering, this is reality. And what I'm trying to do and what I want to do today is kind of give you some ideas for that. So I brought some things along. I'm not sure exactly how to do this. I'll have them here. I hope no one walks off with any of them, but maybe we can, you know, pass them around or something like that. Because I got to get this stuff back. Otherwise, I have to keep going out and buying new pieces of paper and bulbs and things like that that you can use in your own homes and your families. The other part of my message today is it's not just our families and our homes. It's where we work. We can no longer afford as a society to be quiet. We can no longer sort of say, oh, that's okay. Leave the lights on in our 10-story building while people clean it at night and they're not on all 10 stories at one time. Trust me. I'm not even sure they're in the building the whole night long. But the fact of the matter is we need to tell the people we work for and work with we have to do something. Now, I'm saying this to you because anyone want to see my scars from this? because, you know, in doing all of this for at least 20 plus years now, I have those kinds of scars and people have said, oh, forget it. It's not that. And I fought these kinds of battles and not just here in California, but also in other parts of the state, particularly in Sacramento, but also in other parts of the world. I used to live in Denmark. I was a visiting Fulbright Fellow there in the early 1990s and then went back as a visiting professor in late 1999. And one of the things I just mentioned quickly is that when I was in Denmark, I was in touch with Governor Davis's office on advising them on what we were calling then e-government. In other words, how to be much more efficient in using equipment and internet and things like that. Well, at that time, I advised some of his senior people. I said, look, you're going to have an energy crisis in California. Anybody here old enough to remember that 10 years ago? Okay. And by gosh, less than 6 months later, they had a massive energy crisis in California. It was a ripple effect all over the state. Brownouts, blackouts, etc. I was still living in Denmark and then asked by the governor and his staff, will you please come back and help? I said, can you spell the word yet? Did you hear what I just said? Now we all know what that word is about, energy. But then at that time, people in politics really didn't know. And so the result was I came back, worked with people in the governor's office in Sacramento. We tried to do some things that were changing what was happening in our state and also setting, if you will, a model for the rest of the country and world. What happened, as many of you may remember, is that I lost my job. It's called a recall. That was not a joke. Okay, everyone remember that? All right. I think there's some people talking about that now with the current governor. But nonetheless, his time is coming. Nonetheless, the fact of the matter was we left office and then many of us continued. And I wrote several books. I've got 4 books out since that happened in 2003. And the issue now is what can we all do about it? I refer to myself as an applied academician because I do publish books and papers. I do give lectures and talks. I've taught at UC Riverside. I've taught at UCLA. Having moved down here from Northern California, not just in Sacramento, but where I live in the San Francisco Bay Area for about 25 years. So I've got a kind of a good feel for the state of California. I'm still trying to find my way, as Dale knows. I got a little bit lost getting here this morning. But that's because actually my GPS system wasn't working right. But anyway, the thing is that, you know, science and technology are very important, and we are seeing some changes, and there's some things that we have to do. So this afternoon, I'm going to talk about this in another context, and so I'm not going to be repeating too much of what I'm saying now. But what's important, and what I want to communicate this morning is this. That is that in taking action now, there are things that we can do. So let me just show you some examples, and I don't know, Dale, if we can pass some of this around. Hang on 1 second. first of all, I think the title of the talk this afternoon is a sequel to Inconvenient Truth, right? Well, actually, Al Gore took my advice. He did he has a new book out now called Our Choice, a plan to solve climate change. But that came after I already suggested he needed a sequel. So we'll hear more about that later. But the point is, what I want to be very clear about is this. If we are going to do something about climate change, then one of the things we have to do is take action ourselves. So as an example, this is just, you can get these things now electronically, but this is just some examples of how you can monitor your environmental guide at home or at your office in conservation of energy, and they have these for water and other things. So I hope I don't fall over the podium here. There we go. There's also ways in which I was already talking about recycling in terms of bottles and cans and that plastic and other goods. There's also the making of products for these. For example, these are just some examples of paper that's now being recycled and used. This is something very common. We're seeing more and more of it. I thought people might be interested in that. This I thought was kind of interesting. This is actually a pen from recycled products. A pen, right, Wiz? And then these are two books. There are many, many things out today, but these are just two examples of where you can have ideas from and kind of take a look at some of these materials. And what I'm saying is, and maybe we can start this at the other end of the group so everybody gets a chance, but the point of it is there are some ideas in here. These kinds of materials are available. I think you're in Edison territory here, right? Edison, right. You can get a lot of things from Edison today which are very useful for everybody. And now is everyone, oh, Dale, you got to sit down for this, but go ahead with that. I'll give you a chance to distribute that. When you're through with it, if you could kind of those things that you're looking at, just give them to us up here. I've got a couple more to show you in a minute. But what's important here is this. There are a lot of new ideas coming out, too, where you at home, here perhaps in your own facility or next door with the temple, can really kind of collaborate and do something about how to help our environment. And one of the things that I was trying to get at by the concept of a sequel to an Inconvenient Truth or a call to action, if you will, is that here in the church, the parking lot, you can put solar panels covering your parking lot. Edison will give you a nice rebate program for it, and therefore cover your cars so when you leave here, you know, in about 15, 20 minutes, or maybe longer if you stay for everything, when you leave, your car will be shaded, but you're also generating power during the day. And that means when the sun's out, you're actually helping this facility in terms of its power needs. And if you set the system up in what we call net metering, you can feed it back into Edison, and they'll pay you something. Now, it's a nonprofit organization, so you can't declare a profit and all the rest of it, but it's okay. It'll balance out in the end. But the fact of the matter is these systems exist, and they also exist for your home. Now, listen, ladies and gentlemen, look at what they look like. They're not the big things necessarily you see on top of a roof. They can come like this. These are integrated systems. This one here, if you have a little more light, maybe can you actually see it. This will light, you'll see the light bulb go on. So these are the kinds of things. Please return these two, by the way. Oh, here, the bulb's on. Okay? These are the kinds of things that you can have also for your home, for your own roofs. They will last 20 to 30 years. And the issue in all of this is they're affordable today, because there are incentives and there are programs to help support this. And I mention this to you because here in the church, at your offices, and at your homes, these kinds of things are available. Let me also mention, which I'm not showing because it's too heavy to lift, is that there's also toilets and bathroom facilities that you can also have using less water. Many of you remember the days in California here we put bricks in our back of our toilets to kind of reduce the amount of water that's being used. Well, this is now being done in other ways so that you don't have to have the bricks anymore, but the flushing of the water has been reduced. So there are things like that that we can do in our homes, in our offices, and I think that you need to be mindful of it, because remember, when you do have a facility and you want to renovate it, you may look for these kinds of things. If you have a home and you need a new roof, you may look for some that have integrated systems for roofing. If you have an office building, or you manage a building, or you have a complex, or even a retirement home or complex, again, these things work. Now, the issue, and I'm not sure that any of the literature about how I refer to myself. I sound like an applied academician, but I actually call myself a qualitative economist. Now, that's not a joke. And what does it mean? It means that I want to know when 1 plus 1 equals 7, there's something strange about that. And when I was in state government, we had a company. Anyone remember the name of it? Enron, who gave us 1 plus 1 equals 7, gave us verified CPA numbers. It said, oh yeah, that's what it is, et cetera, et cetera. All those people are in jail now. A couple of them have passed away. Shilling's trying to get out of jail at the moment as we speak. But the fact of the matter is, those numbers don't make sense. So what I have done is developed a field which is called qualitative economics, and it's simply this. What is the definition and meaning of numbers? And the plus sign and the equal sign. Because that example I just gave was not isolated. And it happened in this state to all of you less than 10 years ago, and it's probably still happening today. So what we have to do is look at the numbers. So as an example, when you're looking at putting some system in your home that can reduce your use of water, of electricity, and even save you money on air conditioning or heating a pool or whatever else you might have, look at the numbers. Because too often what happens is we are given numbers and we're supposed to see a cost-benefit analysis that gives you a return in 2, maybe 3 years at the most. But the fact is your plumbing, your roof, and other things last, what, 15, 20, 25 years? Those are different kinds of numbers. And if you can begin to see a return on that investment in a much shorter time than that, plus saving the energy and helping the environment, it really does make sense. So I'm mentioning this to you, and I can get into a lot more detail about it. I could say, oh yeah, read my paper, books, whatever. But the fact is, there's more and more going on in this area. And if you do inquire at Edison, you'll find out there's a lot of help that you can get in your own facilities and homes. So that's one major thing I wanted to mention. The second is that there's there has been a debate that I was a member, the reason for the Nobel Peace Prize is I was a member of the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change. And we were the group that put together a series of reports. And I was actually a co-editor and co-author of a couple of the chapters on the third report, which came out around the year 2000. Actually, there was a couple. There was one in 2000. There was one in 1999. So it's either one of those 2 years. There was a more recent report that came out in 2007. It's on that basis of this group of us who worked on this that we got the Nobel Peace Prize along with Al Gore's film, An Inconvenient Truth. But there have been people who said, well, there's emails are going back and forth among you scientists, and there's some questions about the data, and is it really 0.7, 0.5%, or is it whatever? Ladies and gentlemen, that I just saw a report on this now. Over 93% of the scientific community worldwide acknowledges that climate change is due to mankind, or if you will, womankind, or if you really want, personkind. We are responsible for it. We are in charge of stopping it and changing it. Now, there are those scientists and some people and politicians, and again, going back to Washington, D.C., a few people there who say, no, it's nature, it's this. It's not. The issue that scientists were debating on the IPCC was a percent here or a percent there. No one even ever said, there's no climate change. The issue really comes down to it exists, it's there, it's real. Now let's move on and do something about it. So my point today is very simple. There are a number of things that we can do. There are a number of things we have to be responsible for. And this is part of my talk which might cause the greatest controversy. Not that I haven't already been controversial. But we have to pay for it. You want me to repeat that? It's not free. We have to pay for it. Does that mean raising our taxes or fees or other things? Most likely. But we have to stop giving those people who produce fossil fuels tax breaks. We have to stop underwriting their ability to go and drill offshore. Many of them, until just recently, were pushing for that here in California. Myself and others are fighting against it. Others want to import liquefied natural gas to the state. I can go into a whole tirade about that. The fact of the matter is those companies are being subsidized by all of you. And I'm sure they're thanking you right now. You are going to see this on the ballot in California coming up this November, and I'm not being political, but I'm concerned about it, because the supporters of a bill, I forgot what number it is, is basically saying that AB, Assembly Bill 32, should be revoked because it is not helping job creation in the state. That is a lie. Bold, out-faced lie. The supporters of that bill are two major oil and gas companies. I won't mention the names, but it's the biggest one in California. You can guess it's in San Ramon, California. You want me to go further? That company, in fact, has gotten more job creation because of a subsidiary that they have, and I've actually been working with them in some ways. So what I'm saying is there is evidence, totally the contrary, of what this proposition is saying. Again, it's people buying votes, buying political positions, and again, my call to action to all of you is stop it. Let me just give you a good example of where what I mean by this and why it's so evident. This same company, 4 years ago now, I think it was Proposition 98, was on the ballot, and what it said was this, that companies who are already getting or drilling oil and gas off California coast, and this does exist, if you go to Santa Barbara, you can see it. My little baby saw them doing that and thought, look at the wind turbines. I said, I wish. But the fact of the matter is, Proposition 98 said in effect that those companies were going to have to pay taxes on the drilling of oil and gas. California is the only state that doesn't tax this. Texas does it big time. The same company in San Ramon, California, fought it and stopped the proposition from being passed. If that 4 years ago, if that proposition passed, it looked like the state was going to get $4 to $6 billion a year in additional revenue. Now, you're all sitting here, you realize California is bankrupt, don't you? If you like, I will define that for you. It means you can't pay your bills, let alone cutting things. You still can't pay the bills. If that proposition had passed, we would not be in the situation the state's in today, including higher education. I was so happy to hear one of your colleagues talk about how a relative is actually going to go to the California State University system. If any of you have children now and are watching how much it costs to go to the community college, CSU, and UC system today, it's pathetic. It really is. Plus, if they can't pay for it, they have to borrow money that puts them in debt after they graduate for 10 years or more. Everybody listening to me? There's something wrong here, ladies and gentlemen, and we have to take action now. Because if we don't, we're going to allow it to continue. Now, ask yourself a question. If that tax on the oil and gas by those companies, number one or two in San Ramon, Northern California, if you like, I'll give you their address. If you, that was not a joke. If you are, in fact, putting that tax, you will then see it at the pump. But please, listen to me. We have to pay more for our driving, which means we have to get out of fossil fuel vehicles and trucks, and we've got to use our bicycles, our electric trains, which we have to advocate for, and vehicles that are hybrid or electric. That's all there is to it. And thank God now, bankrupt Detroit is beginning to bring those cars into the market as well, because they finally got it. That's one reason they all went bankrupt, frankly. I'm sorry, Ford did not declare bankruptcy. That was a joke. They sold Volvo to save themselves. Okay, so what I'm getting at is there are many things that we need to do. The time is now. We are things coming on your agenda, and your family's agenda, and others for November this coming year, and we have to do something about it. One more time. I am not trying to be political here, but I am trying to say there are some issues, and we have to address them. And the reason I'm not being political, because I'm not talking about who you should vote for governor or for U.S. senator or whatever. I'll give you three guesses. No, one guess. Anyway, the fact is we do have to do something about it. We have to be aware of this. We have to actually get out there and make some changes.
Now, this is the time for comments and questions for our guest speaker.
Can I just ask that one second? Do you have a, if you will, a green committee here in the church? Do you have a... If you don't, I would form one, and I would get you involved and others and come up with plans and do something about it.
you've passed around a number of suggestions of things we could do, but is it enough? Or in order to get back to sustainability, are we going to have to take a big step back in our standards of living and our general lifestyles?
Well, I hope you can make it this afternoon. I'll be talking about that. But the answer is no. Because what a lot of us have spent many, many years on is looking at new ways to solve problems without violating the environment. And there are lots of new, not just products and other things that could be done. I mean, for example, I think some of you are probably familiar with, in here in the church, you might pursue this, what is called Energy Star programs, which you really, you have, you can actually see what the amount of energy uses on a particular appliance or system. And there are things like that that could be done. So there's a lot, and it's not making any kind of a step back. But the key is that how many of you have LED or other kind of flat screen TVs, right? Do you realize that those systems use more electricity than your refrigerator? Do you understand what I'm talking about? Don't leave the stupid things on. Turn them off. You can't turn off the... Yeah, I see you pushing them. Yeah, that's the way to do it. Start in the front row. But the point is, there are things we can do. It's not going to jeopardize our standard of living whatsoever. What it will do, though, is challenge us. And what I also like to emphasize again, it's probably going to create more jobs because we're going to look at things differently. I want to be very clear about this. The scientific community literally is not debating climate change. They are debating over particular things. That's what science is all about. You have a hypothesis. You have some propositions. You have some data to be collected. You check it, recheck it, and recheck it. That's what science is. And if you don't do it, you're not being scientific. And most of my colleagues are doing this constantly. Now, the issue then gets to, and maybe to explain it another way, because I've heard this from several people, that kind of question, not just in the United States, but in other parts of the world. And one of the things is that people say, well, you know, look at the amount of snow that Washington, D.C. had, speaking about Washington, D.C. again, this last January. 30 inches of snow on the ground in Washington, D.C. I think you've seen pictures of it. That's not global warming. That's something else. So most of us now are not using the concept global warming because it gets people's minds in another direction. But the climate change, definitely that's what that is. And I could go on and on and on. The number of tornadoes we have in the United States, we even have them here in California. I heard you had a few around here not too long ago. I mean, the fact is, how many of you have ever grown up in California and never seen lightning? I never did until just a few years ago. It was really disturbing. A series of other things like that. That's climate change, and no one's debating that. I don't want to sound political in answering the question, but what I basically think is the problem is several fold. One is that we're finding people sort of galvanized around these topics. I mean, some of you may have read, even I think it was yesterday or the day before, that the U.S. Yeah, it must have been Friday. The U.S. Senate didn't even pass an energy bill. And by the way, we were one of the few countries in the world without an energy bill. Frankly, that's a whole other thing. But that episode, that problem, exemplifies what you're talking about. In other words, the split between the Democrats and the Republicans in Congress and the Senate, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I don't have an easy answer to that, except I could tell you all who to vote for, and that would help, okay? But what I do know is this, that sometimes even within the Democratic side, they get at loggerheads about how to solve the problem, and there's a bunch of issues, economic and otherwise. On the Republican side, I think people are pretty united in terms of how they approach, and that's why they draw this very clear line in the sand. If it costs more, don't do it. What they haven't done, because I don't talk to too many Republican audience, there may be a few people here who are, but I don't talk to too many groups like that, but I usually point out to them, that why don't you take a look at what is called tax shifting. Tax shifting means if you give these rebates and incentive programs, which have been going on for dozens of years and decades, to the oil and gas industry, shift it away from that, because that's allowed all of us to have basically free gas compared to other parts of the world, and put it into renewable energy or some other places. Now, then, when you talk that way to the Republicans, they either have to say, oh, I better watch how much money I'm taking from Exxon this year, or find out someone else in the solar industry they can get paid to help on that other end of it. Because that's the logical, obvious thing to do. If the issue is, it's not a matter of paying more money, it's where it's going and where it's coming from. Because if we did that, we would find the true cost of oil and gas for our cars and our homes or other places would be astronomical. And the fact is that renewable energy would be much cheaper, and we would find a very big shift. But right now, the Republican side, I think, has taken it and drawn this line in the sand. They're not going to move off the dime on the whole thing. Well, the control of that will probably come to, and some of us even refer to this as energy security. In other words, if, for example, we've stopped or put a moratorium, if you will, on more offshore drilling in the United States because of what's going on in the Gulf of Mexico, that doesn't mean it's okay up in Alaska. It doesn't mean that in 6 months from now we're going to allow people to go back and drill for oil and gas. And by the way, everybody, think about this for a minute. How many other oil and gas spills have there been but didn't hit CNN and NBC? I'm willing to bet there's dozens of them. I already know of some that happened about 15 years ago because I was working with people on this in the North Sea because it was happening through a Statoil company in Norway. So I'm aware of it. This happened before, but it's not gotten the publicity or feedback or pushback. So the issue gets to, if we can stop being dependent as a nation on foreign oil and gas, we're going to be a long way away ahead of the game in terms of what to do. I'm going to get into this afternoon for another reason. That is because as of last week, it was announced that China has now become the biggest energy user in the world. China, which the United States used to be number one, not per capita, just in general, okay? Then secondly, China also had the distinction last year, number one polluter in the world. We, Americans, used to have that also. So we've lost first place to China in two areas. Thank God. But that pollution, that use of those fuels, gets to our coast and right off here in California. It comes this way by way of the water and by way of the air. We are a global community. Mr. Friedman is wrong. The world is not flat. That was a joke. No one got that. Okay. Because he had a book that just came out now about the world being round. All right. Thank God he woke up one day or something on the right side of the table. I don't know what happened with the guy. Although he's still an advocate for nuclear power. Don't get me started on that. But the point I'm trying to make to you is very simple. And that is we have got to be self-sufficient and energy independent. It doesn't mean we need to drill for more oil and gas nor have nuclear power plants. I think there's a lot of wind around here. I think there's a lot of sunshine. I noticed some here even early this morning when I drove in around 9 o'clock. Geothermal, I could go on and on. Wave power, lots of things. And what we've got to do is harness those resources. The technology is there. They're becoming more and more affordable and begin to move into this area. I should get a round of applause for that one, but anyway, go ahead. And I'm not running for office, anybody, in case you're wondering. Okay. Yeah, but let me correct your statistics. Okay. Again, remember, I'm a qualitative economist, so I heard you very clearly. I said 93% of scientists acknowledge there's climate change. What you just said is the public or the general public doesn't accept climate change. Yeah, I know, but that's not the way you phrase it. I want to be very clear because you're right. The scientific community is clearly on board about the issue of climate change. The general public is a little more questioning it. And I would argue that part of the question is because of some of this issue about people thinking, well, is there a debate in the scientific community that says it's here or not here or whatever. That gets back to the global warming versus climate change issue. And I think some people in the communities are saying, well, maybe this is not all that bad. Well, come on, folks. It's getting worse. It's not. I mean, I'll get back to in a second. Is what another thing I would recommend someone in this audience might want to pick up on. I see Doris is giving me. Okay. All right. I'll be here after for more questions. But just a quick answer to your comment is what we've got to do is be sure that people know it's a problem and understand it's a daily problem. It's not just something that's isolated. And I think one of the ways to do it. I would love to see the nightly weather reports have an update on where. And how many hurricanes struck last week in Iowa? And how many, you know, tornadoes are off the coast? Whatever it happens to be. Because I think if we knew that the statistical amount of these things are increasing so much, I think all of us would be continually amazed at all of it.
Well, thank Dr. Clark very much.